This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll hear first this week from High Adventure, their story from February 16, 1954, titled Cold Storage. After that, we'll hear the August 3, 1941 broadcast from Columbia Workshop. Their episode is titled Descent of the Gods.
This is High Adventure, stories that have all three, danger, escape, suspense. And here is the man of High Adventure, George Sanders.
This is High Adventure, and I am George Sanders. I act as host and moderator for our meetings of the High Adventure Society. We gather along about this time each week, and we spend some of our time exchanging exploits, discussing the oddities of nature, and occasionally we touch on the subject of women. Now, don't be alarmed. Our membership is made up of both men and women. Shall we say it's co-educational? About High Adventure? Well, I don't intend to leave you at loose ends. I believe that would be unfair to both of us. So I'll give you an example of High Adventure, and you may learn by saying. Let us take two men, two women, and a truck. An interesting combination? A High Adventure story. This one is called Cold Storage. Ed Slayton, you were a truck driver. You rolled your big rig at night most of the time. You kept strange hours, and you kept strange company, too. Your company was Faye, a neat little nightclub dancer, blonde and bewitching. You had a deep desire to be rid of Faye, but you found yourself tied. You couldn't seem to break loose. Faye had a hold on you like alcohol might have on some other men. You tried so many times, and you failed so many times. Finally, you were assigned a freezer run to the coast with your friend Pete. To you, this looked like the big chance to get away for good. Here was your way out.
Hiya, Pappy. She's all loaded, ready to be checked and sealed.
Fine, I'll get Frankie.
Sit down. What's the hurry?
I just want to get started.
Always in a hurry. We got 4 days to get there.
I don't like to sit around and wait. Got a cigarette?
Nah, I was going to get some at the corner.
Get me a couple of packs, too, huh?
All right, all right. Oh, I forgot.
Forgot what?
Your babe's outside in her car. She wants to see you.
Faye?
You think I'm kidding?
She can wait.
I wouldn't let that wait, Pappy.
Get the smokes, will you, Pete?
Okay, okay. Then maybe you don't mind if I... You see? You don't go out, she comes after you. Some guys don't know when they're lucky.
No.
I thought you'd come out when you knew I was waiting.
Just talking with Pete here.
Well, I want to talk with you.
Go ahead.
Not in front of him.
All right, let's go inside.
You can stay in here, Pappy. I'll go get the smokes. If you ever get tired of it, honey child, just look me up.
Thanks. Maybe I will.
Well, you got the place all to yourself. Frankie's over in the office. He won't bother you.
All right, what do you want, Faye?
Aren't you glad to see me?
What do you want?
You gotta have help, Eddie. You're the only person I could turn to.
How about your friend Ferrano?
He couldn't do it. It's because...
You go to him.
Can't.
You did the other night.
It was business, Eddie. He owns the club, and if he wanted to buy...
Sure, sure. Well, let him help you. I'm busy.
Don't you like me anymore?
I don't like to be kicked around.
I didn't mean to. It was business.
Yeah, yeah, business.
Eddie, come here.
Yeah?
Don't be mean to me.
Leave me alone.
Put your hand in my hair. You said you like it soft the way it is.
No.
Eddie.
What do you want? What do you want?
You do still like me.
Faye.
I knew you did all the time.
I can't help it. You're...
Don't lift my head too much, Eddie. I got to go back to the club.
Hey, baby.
You'll help me, won't you, Eddie?
Sure, sure, I'll help you.
I knew you would.
You ask it.
I got to get rid of something.
Yeah?
It's in the car outside.
Okay.
I didn't know what to do with it, so I came to you.
Sure, sure. What is it?
Ferrano.
What?
He's dead.
I don't get it.
I got his body out in the car. I got to get rid of it, Eddie.
You got a what?
I can't drive around with it, can I?
Well, what happened to him?
He was stabbed to death.
So somebody got to him, huh? It's about time.
Eddie, listen to me. We got to get rid of it.
Well, that's easy enough. Drive to the police station. They'll know what to do.
I can't. Why would I come to you if it was that easy?
Why can't you?
Because I killed him. Isn't that reason enough? I couldn't do anything else, Eddie. He was drunk and he was mean and vicious. He would have killed me if I hadn't killed him. You got to understand.
Sure, sure. I understand.
What are you going to do with him?
You think I'd help you?
You gotta.
I don't have to do anything.
You're the only one, Eddie. You've always been the real one for me. You've always known that.
Yeah.
I'll do anything you want, Eddie. You always asked me to marry you. I'll do that. Wouldn't you like me for a wife, wouldn't you, Eddie?
The cops will get you.
I might have to get away, too. I don't know, but I can't do anything until I get that out of my car. If I could get it away where they wouldn't find it, not for a while at least.
Come here.
What?
Come here. Yeah.
Eddie.
We'll have to be careful. You see this freezer? I'm driving it to the coast with Pete as soon as Frankie checks and seals it, if you can get Ferrano in the back. I'll get it open and stall Frankie for a few minutes.
I knew you'd help
me. Put him behind
me.
The cooling pipes. Frankie won't see it. Can you lug him alone?
Yeah, sure I can. He's not big.
I'll drop it off somewhere along the way where somebody won't find it for weeks. Lots of empty space between here and the coast.
I was sure you'd take care of me somewhere.
I am. You're going to take a train and meet me at Ray's in San Diego. You get it? Ray's in San Diego.
Yeah, I'll be there, Eddie. Ray's in San Diego.
Then we'll figure what to do from there.
Yeah, I was one of my kind of guy.
I'll miss
Eddie.
You, baby. I'll miss you. But you'll be there at the end of the line.
Yeah, you know
me.
Not
much time. Pete'll be back. Come on. Pretty dark, but I'll cut this light so you won't be seen.
I'll make it. Put him behind the pipe.
That's right. And leave the door open. They close with an outside latch, and I want Frankie
Don't
to...
worry. I'll get him in.
Ray's in San Diego. Remember now.
Yeah, I will. I will.
Come here.
Now, Eddie, you said there wasn't much time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
You have the door open.
Sure, sure. Hello, Frankie.
Oh, what's the matter? You look funny.
Nothing's the matter, Frankie.
Oh, for a minute, I thought you were sick. You feel all right?
I'm fine.
Well, I guess you and Pete want to get started, huh?
Well, there's no hurry.
Got the manifest?
There's no rush. Pete's down at the corner.
Come on, let's check the load. I want to get home.
Just a minute, Frankie.
Well?
I want to ask you something.
Well, go ahead.
Well,
Well, go on, go on.
I was wondering, yeah, I was wondering if there was some way I could stay on the coast, yeah, that's it.
Well, it took you long enough to say it. What do I want to stay on the coast for?
Oh, I don't know. I'm tired of this part of the country, maybe that's it.
You want a job out there?
Yeah, that's it, a job.
Well, why didn't you say so? You talk to Benny Flynn in our coast office, see what he says.
Sure, thanks.
Yeah, I hate to lose you, though, you're a good driver.
Well, you know how it is.
Yeah, I know. Well, come on, let's go.
Hey, Frankie, wait a minute.
Hey, what's got into you, Eddie? I want to go home.
No, I just wanted to ask you.
Ask me some other time. I'm tired. Get the manifest out of the cab, will you?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let me see it.
Why do they need a freezer for this stuff?
It's medicine of some kind. Got to keep it below freezing or it spoils.
Oh.
59 cases, 7 packages. Oh, mate, it'll take me an hour to check.
Yeah.
Rose will murder me if I'm late.
Look, Frankie, I was just checking for weight, so they wouldn't roll. It went straight down the manifest. Everything was there.
It was, huh?
Uh-huh. You just seal it up and go on home. I even left the door open when I was checking.
Oh, well, you want to spoil the stuff?
Well, I didn't know. I thought...
I'm going to get it sealed now. There's your manifest. Now, don't break that seal or we'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
They won't take delivery if that seal's broken. That's the only way they know the stuff didn't burn up, see?
Yeah.
I'm going home.
You're not going to check the load, huh?
Well, if you checked it, why should I do it again? Might get too hot in here, and I don't want to get the blame for it. Now, keep that pump going night and day.
Sure.
If any local yokels want an inspection along the way, show them the papers. But don't let them break the seal.
I won't, Frankie, no.
All set, Peppy. Let's get rolling.
You ready, Pete?
I'll see you in a couple of weeks, Frankie.
Not if I can help. Now, watch Eddie there. You know, he's been acting kind of funny.
Don't worry about him. Okay, Eddie.
Sure.
You take the first run?
Yeah.
Hey, you saying goodbye to Faye?
Yeah.
I'll bet you hate that, huh? You lucky bum. What a cream puff.
Yeah.
Ed Slayton, you gunned the motor on the big rig and headed for the open road. When you rolled out of the garage, you passed Faye's little convertible. It was empty. You figured she was hiding until Frankie went back into his office. As the oil-stained highway slipped out from under the wheels of your rig, you began to think. You'd have to break the seal on that door to get the body out. Once the seal was broken, there'd be questions about it. And you had to watch Pete, too. But at the end of the line, a reward. Faye would be waiting. You rolled all that night and the next day, and you began to relax. And when you began to relax, an awful thing happened. You began to think straight. It was then that the picture became perfectly clear. You'd been pulled into a sucker deal.
This dump looks okay. The other boys are pulled in. Let's go, Pappy.
I'm not very hungry.
You never are. Come on. Well, you coming or not?
Yeah, I'm coming, Petey.
Hey, look at the paper.
Yeah?
Look.
Yeah.
They're looking for her. Waiter seen her do it. You know all about it, huh? That's why she came to see you last night, huh?
Yeah.
They may even start looking for you.
They won't if they don't know about me.
Hmm?
You're the only one who can tell them.
Me? Well, you know, I wouldn't tell any.
Yeah, thanks, Petey.
I'm your pal, Pappy.
Come on, let's get rolling.
You don't want your coffee?
I'll get some at the next stop.
Now, who'd have thought it? A beautiful cream puff like face stabbing a guy. Well, just goes
Let's
to show
Let's forget
you.
It, huh, Petey?
Yeah, sure, I know how you feel.
Yeah.
Just like I was telling you, you never can tell what a dame has got. Hey, who are you?
Out of the cab, kid.
Let go.
Come on, out.
We don't carry riders, kid. Company rules.
Now beat it before your mother misses you.
I just wanted to ride to...
Hey, he's no kid. It's a dame.
I just wanted to ride.
You picked the wrong truck, sister.
You're going west.
Yeah, but you're not going, not with us.
We can't leave her standing out here in the middle of the night, can we?
We can and we will. The rule is...
When did you ever listen to the rules?
No hitchhikers on the
SF. I'm not a hitchhiker.
It's okay, honey.
Not a hitchhiker, huh?
I've been waiting for you to come out.
Well, sister, if you think you can force...
Sure we'll take you, cream puff.
No, Pete.
What's the matter? Can't I have a girl, too?
You'll only get us into Dutch.
You got a girl, remember?
What?
I said you got a girl, Pappy. You get it?
Yeah, all right. But I'm not responsible.
Get in, Green Buff.
The name's Virginia.
Okay.
All right, Pete, I'll take it.
That's fine with me, fine.
You don't really mind, do you? Ed? Is that what he calls
you? Sure I mind, but I can't do anything about it.
I'm Pete, Jenny. Call me Pete.
Sure, Pete. Guess your pal doesn't like me.
Right now he don't like any woman, huh, Eddie?
We rolled back on the highway and started around the hairpin turns in the mountains. I was no better off than before, maybe worse. I hadn't got rid of the body, and now there was somebody else to dodge. Two of them, Pete and Ginny. And at the end of the line, Faye was waiting. It was still dark early the next morning when I saw another chance. We were deep in the mountains. The traffic was light. I was driving. Pete was leaning against the far door asleep, and the girl Ginny was lying in the bunk behind the seat. She hadn't spoken. When I looked around, her eyes were closed. I waited for the right spot to come along, then slowly eased the 10-ton semi to a stop. I sat behind the wheel for a second, getting up courage. It was a cliff on the other edge of the road. The body could roll down it and not be found for weeks, if ever. Now was the time. I opened the door and started to slide out, but a voice in my ear stopped me.
Why are we stopping, Eddie?
Huh?
Close the door. It's cold.
I thought you were asleep.
I was. Oh, where are we?
Nowhere.
Close the door. I'm getting cold.
All right.
Oh, that's better. Why'd you stop here?
I was getting sleepy myself.
Maybe you better let Pete drive.
I'm all right.
What, if you're asleep?
I said I'm all right.
Ed?
Yeah?
What's the matter with me?
I don't know.
What is it?
I said I don't know.
Then why don't you like me?
Maybe I do.
You don't.
All right, I don't.
What's she like?
Who?
Girl you got? The one Pete said you had?
Oh. You're just a girl?
You like her? That was a silly question, wasn't it?
No. I don't like her. I don't like her at all.
But you did.
She wasn't worth liking.
But you did.
Yeah, I did.
I knew somebody, too. He wasn't worth liking either, but I couldn't help it.
What'd you do?
I ran away. Each mile further away, I felt better. It's like swimming up from the bottom of a muddy river.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a radio? I'd like some music.
Bust.
Oh. Well, it's all right.
All you do is run, huh?
If you're man enough.
Yeah, I see. Suppose you run, you get to the end of the line, and you still haven't run away.
There isn't any end of the line, Ed. There never is. There never has been.
No.
Are you going straight back when you get to San Diego?
Huh? Oh, no. I thought I might stick around a while, maybe stay.
Will you come to see me?
Well, sure. No, I'll be too busy.
I wish you would.
I said I'll be too busy.
All right.
I'd like to come, sir.
Then why don't you?
I can't.
Of course you can.
I tell you, I can't. I've got to... I don't know.
You don't have to do anything.
That's easy to say.
All right, Ed.
Oh, brother. Now's your chance to become the champ chump, Ed Slayton. And I have a feeling about these things. Just put a good-looking female and nice chap in the right situation. Is there a wrong situation? You may be hanging from a cliff by your fingers, but if she is there, she'll step on them. And we must have our lighter moments, you know. For the serious side, we have two women and two men, two pairs, which is a good bet. A good bet that we have the kind of story that only can be called high adventure.
You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was born in Ohio in 1833, and 7 years later, his grandfather became president. During the Civil War, he was a brigadier general, and from 1881 to 1887, served in the United States Senate. 1 year later, he was elected to the presidency. You should know his name by now, but if you don't, here are two more clues. During his administration, the McKinley Tariff Act was passed, and the first Pan-American Congress meeting was held. And, in addition to being the grandson of a president, he was a great-grandson of one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Yes, he was Benjamin Harrison, 23rd President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
High adventure and the startling conclusion to Cold Storage. Ed Slayton, suddenly you knew what was going to happen and exactly what you were going to do. As you drove, you kept looking at this girl, looking back over your shoulder at her. And as you drove, the coast drew closer, and so did the end of your trip. You thought about Faye. Pete took over the wheel for you in the morning, and you climbed back into the bunk. Sleep came immediately. You slept for some time, till something caused you to waken, the swaying of the truck, voices, or both.
You're going to sit over here.
Will you let go?
What's the matter with you?
Let me out.
You're not going to come over here anytime?
What are you driving?
Didn't I give you a ride?
That doesn't mean you own me.
Well,
cut it out,
can...
Pete.
Huh?
I said cut it out. Leave the kid alone.
You got one girl, remember?
That doesn't mean anything.
It will if I tell the next state trooper we meet.
I said leave her alone.
You think I can't
Please
have
don't.
You?
Don't.
All right. All right.
Ed.
Grab the wheels, Annie, quick.
You won't turn.
Let me get at it.
We'll hit the bridge.
Hold Pete back.
You hit him pretty hard.
Don't turn this wheel.
Eddie,
get tight. Okay.
Oh, I thought sure we'd hit it.
See if you can slide Pete up back. No, you better steer while I do it.
I'll try.
Just keep it on the road.
Is he badly hurt?
No, I just caught him one on the jaw. He'll come out of it soon.
No.
Let me get behind the wheel.
Oh, it's my fault. You and Pete are good friends.
Yeah, we just work together.
Oh.
Ginny, I'd like...
What's wrong?
Inspection station up ahead.
Well, what about Pete?
When we stop in line, you see those bushes? We'll open the door and roll him into them.
Well, couldn't we say he's asleep?
No, we can't take the chance. He'll wake up and talk. Won't hurt him. I gotta have the time. Gotta have the time to do it my own way.
Do what?
Never mind.
All right, Ed.
Let me handle it. Remember now. Yeah, it's an inspection, all right.
Then everything's all right.
It will be. Open the door.
Ed.
Open it. Now shove him out. Nobody's looking.
Don't you think...
Shove him out. That's it. He'll stay there in the bushes till he comes out of it.
All right, you... Let's see your manifest, weight certificate, and license.
Get that door closed.
All right.
You hear me, mister?
Yeah, sure. Here they are.
Who's the girl?
My wife. We're going to stay on the coast.
Cease. Check his plates and tires.
Yes, sir.
Well, come on, let's open her up and have a look.
What?
I said open up the trailer and let's check your load. You think I'm going to go by this manifest?
Look, pal, this is a freezer. It's bonded.
I don't care. I want to check.
Sorry, you can't do it.
Who says I can't?
Look at the paper.
What?
That stuff's perishable if it gets above freezing. Medicine or something. I don't know.
I'm still going to check it.
Told you it's bonded. Got a seal on the back. You open it and the stuff spoils, you're liable. Don't say I didn't warn you.
Sealed.
That's what I said.
Oh,
I'll sue you so fast your head'll swim.
You should have told me it was sealed.
It's in the papers.
Yeah, but I still ought to give you a summons.
What for?
Reckless driving. Get rolling.
All right. Got out of that one. What's the matter?
Nothing, Eddie. Guess there is an end of the line after all. It's San Diego up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
This is the police station, Ed.
Yeah, I know. San Diego. End of the line, kid. Come on, get out.
But, Eddie...
Just stick around. I want you to hear this.
Move it, buddy. You can't park it here.
Maybe I can, officer.
I said you can't.
I got something for you.
Oh, you have?
A dead body I've kept in cold storage for you.
Are you drunk?
Come on, I'll show you.
What kind of a story are you giving me?
Tony Ferrano, what's left of him. You probably got notices on him.
Hey.
Just a minute. You can have him. Now, he's right behind the...
You got your bodies mixed. This was the dame that killed him. We got her picture. Well?
Hey.
Hey, there's another one back in here. What are you doing carrying these two stuffs around? Hey, you got some talking to do, buddy.
She must have got locked in.
Was that her, Eddie?
Yeah, yeah. The door must have closed on her, and she couldn't get out. Froze to death.
She was very beautiful.
Yeah. She wouldn't have come and met me anyway. And I wouldn't have stopped at Ray's to find out if she did. She put herself on ice.
Round back, buddy. I'm going to have to hold you till this thing's straightened out.
Yeah, sure.
Ed.
It's okay, Jenny. You go on.
I'll wait for you.
Might take some time, kid. They're going to pin something on me, I'm sure of that.
I'll wait.
Come on, buddy.
Eddie?
Yeah?
Still not the end of the line, is it?
Huh?
Is it, Ed?
No. No, not now. Not even cold storage, baby. I'm just coming up through the river. And I can swim, Jenny. I can swim.
Storage, a really thrilling story of high adventure. The next time you see one of those big freezer trucks rolling along the highway, be sure to give him plenty of room. After all, you won't have any idea what his cargo is. Might even be someone's mother-in-law tucked away in that huge wagon. Now, I'm just joking. I have a great regard for mothers-in-law, or is it mother-in-laws?
High adventure, be sure you're tuned our way at the same time next week. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Pardon me, will you, while I tune my dulcimer? I like to accompany my own narration.
The Columbia Workshop presents number 13 of 26 by Corwin.
You know, unless you've ever been a god yourself, you have no way of knowing how dull immortality can get to be sometimes. Take my word for it, friends. I'm a god of long standing. Hey, how'd you like a little shot of a minuet?
Descent of the Gods, a speculative fantasy by Norman Corwin, having to do with some familiar gods in unfamiliar circumstances.
I'm a little-known Greek god named Nick. Little-known because I happen to be the god of trivia, which is about as exciting as being a 16th vice president in a gimlet factory. Very boring work. In fact, it's under the heading of trivia that this chronicle comes. You know, all history's trivial to a god, since it's always repeating itself like gossip. Only taking the time to tell the story about the visits of Venus, Mars, and Apollo because I think you ought to hear a running account. Not merely the fragmentary accounts that appeared in your press and radio from time to time. Anyway, it was in the fall of 1942 that Venus got it into her head to visit the New World. Now, first let me clear up which Venus I'm referring to. There are all kinds of Venuses. I don't mean any of the imitation Venuses, like the Venus Genetrix or the Venus of Milo, Venus of the Steel Pier, Atlantic City, Verticordia, Medicean, Capitoline Venus. I mean Venus, the original goddess of love and beauty herself, and not just a reasonable facsimile or plaster cast of same. As I say, it was in 42 that Venus, having read of the United States in a book called Bullfinch's Earth, decided to visit the place. How she got there is none of your business. As a matter of fact, I'm prohibited from telling you any of the details of life among the gods due to a ruling of Deletius, the god of censorship. Suffice it to say, her descent was full of a good deal of razzle-dazzle and fireworks and Roman candles, and the Roman gods make a big production out of those things. We Greek gods take it a lot easier. But the first thing most of you knew about it was when a network radio program was interrupted to bring you the news.
We interrupt the program of the Four Horsemen to bring you the following bulletin.
Boston, Mass. Police and civic authorities are puzzled over the appearance early tonight of a beautiful woman who claimed she is the goddess Venus. Bewildered spectators reported that she descended on a brilliant shaft of light on Boylston Street in the heart of the city shortly after 8. At first, she was mistaken for some movie exploitation in connection with the opening of a new picture. Asked what she was doing in Boston, she said she had read a reference to that city as the hub of the universe and wanted to see what a hub of the universe looked like. An investigating committee of legal experts and police have referred the case to immigration authorities. A public hearing will be held tomorrow. For further details, read your paper.
We now return you to the program of the Four Horsemen.
Well, the dispatch was right. Venus was quizzed by a court of experts. And if you can think of anything more undignified for a goddess than to be quizzed by a court of experts, just mail a suggestion to me in care of trivia. Story was, of course, treated by the press and radio with a proper degree of sensationalism. Why, in some quarters, the visit was looked upon as the most terrific thing to happen since the release of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which, you may remember, had been previously hailed by one of your columnists, a certain Westbrook Pegler, as the greatest thing to hit the earth since the armistice. However, it was the hearing before the special committee at Boston that first brought Venus into sharp encounter with some of your finest minds.
All right, that will be enough picture-taking for the present. Will the press photographers kindly clear out? Clear the court, please. We will now proceed with the inquiry. Gentlemen of the board, will you begin your questioning?
No, Miss Venus. Unaccustomed as we are to public appearances of deities, we feel that we cannot simply accept your word of godship, but we must ask for credentials. Have you any?
Dei homines melius factam, quam homines deos. Numquam rogavimus, ut aliqui ex illustribus patribus vestris, aut signo, aut documento mortalitatem probaverint.
Oh, It was
she means, so and so.
No, but I think she's talking French as well.
We better get Professor Huntington to translate it. Professor Huntington, would you kindly translate the testimony of the witness for the benefit of those in the committee who have gotten a little rusty in their knowledge of French?
The witness said in Latin, quote, "The gods are more hospitable to mortals than mortals to the gods. Never have we asked any of your illustrious ancestors to prove by signs or symbols their mortality," unquote.
Now, madam, you have been heard to speak English prior to this investigation. Why did you choose to reply to my colleague, Mr. O'Shaughnessy, in Latin?
Because Latin is one of my credentials.
I see. Have you any others?
Apparently by credentials, you mean something of sufficient supernatural force to convince you I'm other than a human being. In an earlier day, such impudence was answered by the visitation of catastrophe. Floods and holocausts and famine were hurled upon the heads of mortals in exaction of due expiation.
Will you answer Mr. Saltonstall's question, please?
Answer yes or no.
If you keep insisting on it, I'll give you credentials of the most convincing sort. One appeal to Jupiter, Fulgur, and you'll be struck right in the middle of the committee by a bolt of lightning.
Miss Venus, this hearing will simply not tolerate any attempt at intimidation. Moreover, another remark of this sort, and we will be obliged to cite you for contempt of the committee.
What about contempt of the gods?
Now, just a moment, madam. We are merely trying to establish whether, in what even you will admit is a strange situation, we are being hoaxed. If you are indeed a Roman goddess, we have certain restrictions regarding immigration which must be complied with.
Yes. And if you cannot prove to our satisfaction that you are what you have claimed to be, then we must recommend arraignment on a number of charges, such as flying without a license in violation of federal aeronautical regulations.
Exactly.
Flying low over a thickly populated area in violation of municipal ordinances, attempting to deceive officers of the law, perjury, contempt of court.
Then I suppose I must convince you. Since it would no doubt constitute contempt of the committee to strike dead any of its honorable members, I will call upon my worthy cousin, Jupiter Fulgur, to destroy by lightning the chandelier directly over the center of the courtroom as a token credential.
Well, we might as well be practical about this. Will the spectators sitting in the center of the courtroom please clear the area directly under the chandelier? That's it. Now then... Please proceed, Miss Venus.
Jupiter Fulgur, Jupiter Fulminator, I, Venus, call upon thee to ascend from the altar of Campus Martius and to strike with your ready wrath the main lighting fixture of Courtroom 12A, Suffolk County Courthouse, Boston, Massachusetts. It takes a little time to warm up. But it'll be along any minute.
Order in the court! Order in the court! The cameramen will please not take any pictures until recess is called. Clerk.
Yes, Your Honor.
Will you please enter the fallen chandelier as Exhibit A?
Yes, sir.
And then call an electrician to repair the lighting system. It seems Jupiter Fulgur blew out all the fuses.
Yes, sir.
The hearing will now continue. Miss Venus, I think we are satisfied with your credentials.
But, Mr. Chairman, since she's a foreign goddess, what assurance have we that she's not a fifth columnist or an agent of foreign propaganda?
No, Fitzpatrick. I think that question is improper in view of existing evidence.
Well, there would be no harm in having Venus register with the State Department.
That is entirely a matter for the jurisdiction of the federal government and nothing for us to decide in this hearing. Now, unless there is dissenting opinion from the committee, I will declare the witness to be an accredited deity of sound mind and with the recommendation that the usual formalities of registration be waived and that the hospitality of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and of its sister states be extended to her as long as she remains on these shores.
I took care of Venus's reception. Of course, there was some talk about having her investigated by the Dyes Committee. A number of pressure groups wanted to have her deported immediately on the grounds that she might be a potential danger to the youth of the country. But nothing came of this, and in the meantime, she was offered all kinds of new propositions every day.
Miss Venus, would you be available on the coast on the 28th to judge a beauty contest at Venice, California? We're selecting the most beautiful hat check girl in the United States, west of Denver, and we will...
Because of the Federated Women's Clubs of North and South Carolina, we extend you a cordial invitation to speak at the annual convention of the FWC.
I'm telling you, darling, we put an orchestra behind you and get a good MC who can sing like Don Ameche, see? And get Lynn Murray's chorus to give it class and a good comedy team, and I'll guarantee you the biggest hoppers rating on the air. Now, we can call it the Venus Varieties, or Venus Presents, or 26 by Venus, or something like that. And get a soap of perfume.
I'd like to see any other studio beat our terms. Now, look, one picture a year for $100,000. Well, Garbo don't get that much, and she's had more experience in pictures than you. Now you'll have your own choice of material, director, cameraman, and supporting cast.
We'd like to make you an offer to endorse our new screen line of Vanity Girl, which I
am 41 years old and a bachelor. Very well off and been looking for a wife.
Would you be interested in doing a 10-minute guest spot on We the People?
Would you find out about the back of this menu and write something under it for my nephew? His name is Oliver.
We would appreciate the use of your name as one of the patrons of the Committee on the Conservation of Everything by the Use of Nothing Society's annual dinner and entertainment.
Magazines, soaps, dishes, movie actors, animals and gods. I'm writing an article
for the
I'm
a young girl of 28, and I've been going out with two men off and on for 6 years. And one of them has pimples, and the other tells me he's afraid to get married.
We are dedicating a new market in downtown Los Angeles. And we were wondering if it would be possible for you
to come down. But Venus accepted none of these propositions. She said she was a goddess and not a celebrity. She traveled incognito and alone. She went into high places and humble places, and she looked and she saw. And when she'd seen what she wanted to see, she came back to the East, and she announced she was going to return to the home of the gods. Well, there were so many requests for interviews before she left, she granted a press conference, and the reporters kept her busy answering questions.
What would you say were the outstanding observations you made during your stay, Venus?
Well, you appreciate that I must, of course, confine my comments to matters affecting love and beauty. Those are the matters over which I have suzerainty, so to speak.
Why are you confined to that subject only?
Jove only knows.
Well, what do you have to report about American love and beauty?
Only wholesome things. Here in the new world as in the old, you mortals love beauty, and you love love. By chance, Felicity, a few enjoy the symmetry and charm of an endowed and innate beauty. Still another few possess the means of such felicity, affording as they do the ointments and the jeweled waters. But these are few and rare. The millions of you, yes, the multi-millions of you, each wants to look beautiful and well to others and yourself. The girl at the machine, the elevator boy, the weary typist and the shipping clerk, the busy housewife straightening out the house before she goes to town to meet her husband, the schoolgirl primping in the corridor. They all want beauty and good looks. Each last one likes the smell of new, clean things to wear. Some of them cannot afford to buy a hairdo or to straighten out their teeth. Others wear their glad rags only once a week. Some never, having only sad rags. But always they are hoping things will be better, hoping they will be better. Always they'd like to earn a little more, to stay ahead, to put a little by. And as for love, who would not be a part of that? How low must one be before he cannot dream of loving and of being loved? No, my domain will never shrink. Or newer still, I was the goddess of the great.
That's me, Nick. I can handle a harp as good as a dulcimer. Nothing to it. Well, Venus talked to them for 20 minutes without stopping, and then she disappeared in a cloud of fine Roman incense. Before she left, she said she'd recommend the country to a couple of other gods, Mars and Apollo, whom she thought might be interested. And they were, apparently. Why, Mars got so hepped up over Venus's account on the 1st of March, the month named after him. He's quite an exhibitionist, you know. He arrived on the roof of the War Department at Washington by special arrangement. You Americans by that time were getting accustomed to welcoming ancient gods, and there was a 21-gun salute. fine speech by the Secretary of War and so forth. And Mars, who's never been what you'd call exactly glib, rather bungled it a little. Obviously, he'd been boning up for his visit on an old edition of Bullfinch's Earth, because after the Army and Navy chiefs had welcomed him, he pulled a boner.
Thank you. Thank you. It is an honor and a privilege to be received in this cordial manner. And I am looking forward eagerly to meeting your splendid General George Washington, whose exploits I have been studying with great interest. I would also like to extend my felicitations to your naval hero, Admiral John Paul Jones, whose victory over the French and Indians in the great Battle of Bull Run was remarkable in the
lucky,
annals of military
lucky for
and
Mars.
Naval conquest.
Everybody
and
took
that,
it as a big joke, see? They thought that was just his prankish way of giving the military bigwigs a hot foot. There was a great deal of parading, receptions at various embassies, and he was engaged to write a military column in PM as the guest of the general. He was interviewed by Major George Fielding Elliott over CBS. There was an article by General Hugh Johnson attacking him for something he said. And he was signed up as a technical advisor on a new war film. But he left two fiascos in his wake before he finally went home. The first one was in connection with Information Please, on which he was invited to be one of the four experts, along with John Kieran, FTA, and Dean Taylor. It seems that Fadiman had some special questions pertaining to war, but Mars didn't know any of the answers.
Wait a minute now. I don't know.
But Kieran knew. Next thing that happened, he was invited to attend some army maneuvers, and he went along in a staff car with two majors and a colonel. And the only trouble was that Mars had never seen a machine gun before, to say nothing of tanks and planes and flamethrowers. And when the heavy maneuvers started, why, of course...
What are those fearful instruments, Colonel?
Oh, they're some of our new 20-ton tanks.
Dear, dear, very frightening. And what are those?
Why, our new six-motored flying fortresses, OV-203. Above them is a squadron of our improved dive bombers, the X-122.
Colonel, I'm afraid I don't feel very well.
Now there are some of our new 30-mile guns operating from railroad
and I think perhaps I better fight Major. Our guest is getting very pale.
What? Oh, I say, aren't you feeling well, Mars?
Oh. Good heavens. Mars has fainted. Get some water quickly.
Stop the maneuvers. Stop the maneuvers. Stop the
maneuvers. Yeah. Mars toppled right over in a dead faint when the artillery opened up. Took a hose of cold water to revive him. And when he recovered from the shock, he decided to go back home and sit in a nice, quiet pantheon until his nerves settled down. However, he managed to hold a press conference before he left.
I must admit man's progress in arms has been astounding. In ancient times, a man's strength, skill, and valor had something to do with his fighting. But today, I observe that detonating power of various nitrogen compounds, the trajectory of a shell, the thickness of steel plating, and the revolutions per minute of a gasoline engine are of greater importance. You make thicker armor to stop bigger shells, and then you have to make bigger shells to pierce the thicker armor. Truly amazing. Now, I am going to make a confession, gentlemen. The real reason for my collapse during the recent army maneuvers was not, as you so charitably reported, due to something I ate, but was the result of complete shock and panic. Yes, you may well be surprised, but your surprise is hardly comparable to the sensation which I experienced when I fully realized that the godship of war has, in effect, passed from my hands to that of mankind. In fact, I am seriously contemplating the possibility of resigning as god of war.
That's Mars for you. Grandstand play every time. Didn't mean a word of it. Just a gag. He knew he'd done nothing very remarkable during his visit, so he had to make a great splash on the way out. Succeeded all right, because for a whole month after that, Walter Lippmann and Dorothy Thompson were writing opinions on the subject. And just as the excitement over Mars began to subside, Apollo came down for a visit. No flashbulbs or fanfare about his descent. He just showed up one afternoon at the Greek embassy in Washington, and he went soberly about the business of registering in a civilized way.
I should like to register through the proper channels.
Sure, I got a channel right here. What is your name, sport?
I am Apollo, better known to the ancestors of your great country as the god of music and culture.
Well, of course, soon as the story got out, he was swamped with telegrams and cablegrams and radiograms and offers and propositions.
And we would be deeply honored to have you join a symposium on the subject of present-day tendencies in the music and education.
The Museum of Modern Art cordially invites you to dedicate an all-Apollo exhibition at 4
Would you consent to toss out the second ball in the World Series?
Dear Apollo, my little boy is studying music, and I have great difficulty in making him practice.
Therefore, we thought it might make a striking program if you were to be one of the four guests on People's Platform this week. The subject is Western Culture, Is It Worth Preserving? Other participants will be a taxi driver, the editor of Western Culture magazine, and a soda jerker from a chain.
Dear Apollo, I've seen your pictures in the paper, and I think you are the most handsome man I've ever seen. I would trade you for Clark Gable or Tyrone Power any day. Now, I have a little paper.
Apollo accepted some of those offers because he was interested. No stuffed shirt, he. He said he was glad to appear on the People's Platform with a soda jerk and a taxi driver because he thought little men and big men should talk things over oftener. He coined an epigram about little men, which I pasted in my scrapbook of trivia. Quote, "The little man is a bigger man than a big man whenever he gets together with more little men." End quote. Apollo stood in fine with everybody, he did. Why, around commencement time, he was given 7 degrees in 6 days.
Doctor of Law at Harvard.
Thank you.
LLM at Catawba.
Thank you very much.
PhD at South Dakota State College of Agriculture.
I'm greatly honored.
Doctor of Fine Arts at Princeton.
I'm very happy to receive this degree.
Doctor of Humanics at Oglethorpe.
A rare privilege.
Master of Music at Juilliard.
A pleasure and an honor.
D-Lit at Sweetbriar.
Thank you so much.
He covered a lot of ground, Apollo did. And his modesty and his gentle Greek bearing won him many friends. Of course, musicians and theorists were after him day in and day out because he naturally knew all there was to be known about music. Sometimes he was dragged into some pretty high-flown discussions.
But of course, Apollo, the question is this. Does a hypomixolydian tonality resemble a major key with either an excessive emphasis on the subdominant or a top-heavy and ultimately prevalent dominant?
Pardon me, but that is not the question, Harkness.
Hmm?
We must be careful not to impute relationships to keys separated from discursive modulation unless we have strong collateral evidence from the key functions of a definite musical pattern. Don't you agree, Apollo?
But the perfect example of my point is the use of the triskydica hyperhendica enea heptachord.
Gentlemen, the question seems simpler to me than that.
Yes, Apollo?
What do you consider the issue, Apollo?
Is the music any good?
Well, things went along, and Apollo got to be so popular that his admirers urged him to stick around, take out citizenship papers. Some of them even wanted him to run for office. There was a special Apollo issue of Fortune. Series of articles about him in the Saturday Evening Post. And a Pulp magazine feature claiming to tell the true love story of Apollo. None of this seemed to bother him much. One day, he just upped and said he was going home. Unlike Venus and Mars, he didn't hold any press conference. But he did give a radio talk just before disappearing into the night mists over Madison Avenue.
I've been asked to make a few farewell remarks concerning my impressions of the state of mortal man. They are these. Man is greater than the gods in many ways, and lower than the ants in many others. He can fly the air and swim under the sea, and fling his voice around the world, turn night into day with filaments, grind lenses which draw the moon down until its mountain peaks are barely 20 miles away, take pictures of men's insides from without, send heat and light and horsepower across 400 miles of desert in a copper wire, listen to the sounds of 7 continents by fingering a knob, or clock the yawning heavens with a trigger hair, and tell you 20,000 years ahead what second, of what minute, of what hour, of what day the sun will be eclipsed, and where the fleeting shadow will be seen. Man can make music that will hold 1 million other men transfixed, can weigh the very earth he stands on, freeze by heating, move a mountain with some sticks, press shapeless masses into solid blocks, teach fleas to dance. Yet, give this wonder man a simple problem such as how to keep from killing several million other wonder men just like himself each 20 years or so. And he is baffled and distraught. This man who understands the vast complexity of logarithms and who has a formula for harmony and chemistry, for logic and hydraulics and for stress and strain. Just give this man the problem of some surplus livestock on the one hand and some hungry men who cannot buy that livestock on the other, and he'll fume and fret and make up laws and regulations and then finally destroy the livestock and leave the hungry men still hungry. This man who knows more than the gods do of the spectrum of a star, who comprehends the structure of a leaf, splits atoms and counts molecules, traps whales and diagrams of bugs' anatomy, knows not enough to grasp the simplest truths and bend them to his will. He hails the golden rule as golden, then puts it on a shelf to be forgotten, and he makes new rules of lead. But I shall not despair, for man has in him all the seeds of his own betterment, and one day they shall sprout. When that day comes, the vine shall reach to heaven and the gods climb down. Now I have finished. I will go back to my Olympus. Goodbye, my hospitable mortals. Good fortune to your seed.
Well, so then he went home. That's all. Simple as that. Haven't been any gods to send since then, so there's no more to the story. I'll keep you posted if anything turns up. That's my job now. Nick, the Greek god of trivia. That's me. Anything you want to know that's not worth knowing, just drop a card to trivia in care of Nick. Yeah, Dulcimer's gone, gotten out of tune again. Oh, well.
The Columbia Workshop has brought you Descent of the Gods, written and directed by Norman Corwin as number 13 in the workshop cycle, 26 by Corwin. Nick, the Greek god of trivia, was played by Henry Morgan, better known to radio as Here's Morgan, Venus by Eileen Burns, Apollo by House Jameson, and Mars by Winfield Honey. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our stories this time. You can find more from High Adventure, Columbia Workshop, past episodes of this show, and all the others at RelicRadio.com. There's a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.